There it is.
Well, I'm looking at the plot, and it just looks to me like it's a straight line.
Yeah, it looks actually, which is beautiful.
Well, oh, that's it good? Has to be, because we know theoretically they're going to be straight lines.
Okay.
It would have been very worrying if it wasn't a straight line. That would have said there were definitely problems with my code.
Okay.
So they ought to be straight lines. There should be one with 12 straight lines where I put them all on the same slot, but you may not have got that yet.
Maybe it's worthwhile, you know, first of all, so we have Phil, Michelle, myself, Michael, and Candace on the call, and I'll start off by saying thanks, Michelle, for getting us started. This is great to be moving along on this, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Do you want to talk us through what you sent us?
Yeah, I'm just trying to, I'm looking at where I sent, I copied that to myself, but I didn't the most recent one. I'm just trying to remember what I sent you. The most recent thing I sent was a plot that had 12 different plots all on one page, and I don't know whether that has arrived with people yet. They're all straight lines, so there's nothing exciting to see. It's just reassuring because they're supposed to be straight lines.
So there's one that you sent that says this has all 12 plots.
Yeah.
But I didn't see more than one.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting because on my R screen, that's what I'm seeing here, but on my R screen it had 12.
Oh,
but then
I
had to come home. Yeah.
It was 12 different plots, or it was one
yeah,
like
it was
12 a 4x3 matrix
plots
of plots?
All on one page. It was like 3x4. So I have no clue why that didn't happen. But obviously I had to leave work to get home to do the call, so I didn't stop and look at my mail and see what had arrived.
I just have one big fat line.
Yeah, I just have one plot. It should be a straight line. But I did have 12 separate ones, and they were all straight lines.
Okay.
Which they're supposed to be, so that's okay.
Okay, good.
I thought that, you know, if we were at some point wanted to give an example, it would be more convincing to beam something up with 12 straight lines than one straight line.
Sure.
We didn't choose the one that was straight.
Sure.
So, I'm going to have to find what I sent. Lots and lots of it is code, which is only of interest for those of you who code R, so that's really for Phil and Michael.
Right. So there's like an all code, a couple other codes, and then some results code.
Do you want me to run through what's on that?
Sure, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I'm just closing down. I've got two computers open here. I was trying to find a recapture of the Word file you sent us, Michael, because I couldn't, it wasn't immediately to hand, but I think I'm just not going to worry about that for now.
So okay.
I'm just closing one of these two machines down. I really don't need two machines all over my desk. Okay. So the old code is just an overview. What happens is there's a series of simulations. So there are 20 simulations.
Let me ask while you're going through this, do you have like a short summary of each file written so that we can, you know, if we ever want to kind of rerun some of this or document it, we can kind of go through that?
If you want to run it, all you do is source in all code. That runs everything.
So all code will run everything?
Yeah, everything else is sourced into there. That's what I'm about to describe to you.
Oh, I see. Okay,
I don't have
Thank
documentation
you.
On anything yet because I haven't had time. I was still
right,
changing
things. Right,
no,
that's fine. If I wanted to play with it, I just wanted to know how to do that. But okay,
yeah,
great.
Well, you
Sorry
probably
to interrupt.
Will
Thanks.
In about 20 minutes' time.
And I can't open it.
It's a text file. You just open it with Notepad.
Me Windows cannot open this file.
Well, try to browse and use Notepad.
I'll try. Use the web. Oh, crap.
No, Pardon don't use the web. Language. Say select the program.
There
should be a button underneath that for select the program.
Yeah, I'm browsing.
And
Notepad.
You can use Word. You can open it in Word. It works fine. I tried
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you can also open it in Word, but it is a text file because I'm on Unix and you don't use the TXT ending when you're on Unix.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it opened.
It opened. Good. Okay. What all code does is it runs through the simulations, setting the values that are going to change. So it's like an overview one, and when you source that in, it automatically puts everything else in for you. I'm just finding my copy. So it calls a set of code called setup code set one, which really does set things up. It sets all the initial values, and I sent two pages of documentation earlier in the week, which you should have got. It was a Word file, I believe, that describes how I set up the initial values.
Is that articles for Simulation Group?
It was the email that I sent about, I sent on Monday.
No, articles for Simulation Group was for me.
No, that's from Candace.
I sent
you an email on Monday.
The response, I'm sorry, thank you. Simulation set 1 version 2 doc.
That's it.
Okay.
It talks about that the eta is 0, beta is equal to 1. The variance of the x's, which are called the true pre-score, because we've always got, also got truncated data, I've also got data with extra measurement error, was equal to 1. That both the sample sizes were equal to 30. That the reliability for the pre is the same as the reliability of the post, and we're recording the initial Cs. And then some things change from simulation to simulation. The things I changed were the mean for x, which went 3, 4, 5, or 6, and the value of omega, which goes minus 1, minus 1/2, 0, plus 1/2, plus 1.
And remind me, what does Omicron stand for?
Omega, well, it's like beta 0, but we called it omega in your table before. So the post is equal to omega plus beta times the pre plus an error for the control group. It's equal to omega plus beta times the pre plus eta for the treatment group. So omega is the change between the pre and the post.
Okay.
Okay? And if you, the first page of that does go through that. I think down there at the bottom where it says post scores, it's got post equals omega plus beta pre plus epsilon.
Okay.
Because we have eta equals to 0, so you don't need to put a eta in. Although I have coded an eta equal to 0 in the code so that I can change eta and not have to go in and change all the different pieces of code.
Right.
The idea is if you want to change things, you change all code and you change the setup code, and then after that, things can pretty much run as they are.
Right, that's great.
I had a problem when I ran all 20 that R ran it quite happily. I was able to exit R. I could then, if I ran a batch file and didn't actually open R on the screen, I could still access what I'd saved, but when I tried to open R again on the screen, it couldn't retrieve the data. The file was too big. Now, I don't know how much that is to do with my computer account and how much it's to do with R, and I'll talk to the IT people tomorrow because this is the first day I had that problem. But I may have to break it down so that rather than doing all 20 in one piece of code, we have to break it into chunks of 5 or something like that. But I was saving
every
little...
You can print it directly to a file, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
You said you tried printing it to the screen. I wonder if you can print it directly to
no,
a file instead.
I have printed it to a file. That's what you've got. I did that by running outside R and...
Okay.
And inputting the print code from outside R. If I open R to go back in to play with that data, for example, to get the plots, I have now if I open R, I can't get that those 20 simulations back. R won't open them. I think that files just got too big. So if somebody else wants to try it, they can. But what I was doing this afternoon was cutting down, so I was doing a group of 5, so I could go in and play with plots. So just be warned that R may not... They're very, very big arrays. I saved absolutely everything because I wasn't sure what we were going to want.
Mm-hmm.
And in practice, most of it can be removed off. I just wasn't sure what to remove. The all code inside there, the first thing says setup code. That really sets everything up for your simulations. And then as you look down, it changes, as you go through simulation 1, 2, and 3, it changes the mean for X and it changes omega, which is the OM. And then it brings in the setup sim code, which basically does just about everything else. We now need. So I need to set up SIM code.
And you have to program all this by hand?
Well, yeah.
I think ours is a pain in the neck.
Well, a lot of everything that starts with a pound sign is just a comment.
No, I see that, but to have to...
And actually, I changed the name of that from setup sim code to...
You know, each number, as opposed to having to retype.
Well, this is why it took me 2 weeks.
You could have done it differently, where you just set up a list of possible parameter values and then have it cycle through that list, but...
Yes, if
honestly,
you do
it doesn't
double
take
loop,
much time.
If you do two things, if you do a double loop inside S, I know S gets very unhappy. If you have a treble loop, which we could have done for all code, it could have been a treble loop, for sure. I could have done a loop inside a loop inside a loop and had it go through those values.
Right.
The only thing that would have got shorter was all code. There are several couple of other places I could have done a loop, but the loop would have only looped through two before it had to change to something else. I was trying to make it transparent as my first important thing because I thought we were going to share code. So
sure.
I made transparency more important than efficiency. We
right.
could probably cut 25% off this without a problem. But I didn't
right.
try to cut off. I tried to make it so that other people could read it and understand what was going on. if you find the one that's called SimCode Set 1, which is actually the thing, I've got an old version of old code here. I've got so many updates, and I carried everything home. The SimCode Set 1 is the one that goes through and assumes you're already in a particular simulation. So if in simulation 1, it goes in there. It saves the seed. It sets the initial values so that we can go back and check what initial values they set. We won't lose them if I have to go back in. It sets up a thing called results array. The results array has the, if you go along the names, it starts with eta 2t. That was a two-sample test on the post scores. Eta is the estimate. Then 2t lower is the lower bound for the 95% confidence interval.
I'm not sure I'm following where you are.
Have you found
SimCode Set 1?
SimCode Set 1, it looks like.
I went into SimCode Set 1. Gotcha, thank you.
I thought Setup Code Set 1 was sort of obvious. It just sets all the initial values.
Okay. I was going to say I'm...
You only use that one once. I think it's transparent. SimCode Set 1 is the one that's important. If you go down about the fourth line of comment, it says Setup Array for results for this simulation.
Yep. So that's just that's the structure of it.
Yeah. So that 3,000 is for the 3,000 trials. The 4 on the right-hand side is for the 4 types of data, and the 14 is the list you see below. So eta 2t is the estimate for eta when you do a two-sample t-test on the two post scores.
Okay.
And the 2t low and 2t high are in the lower and upper bounds for a 95% confidence interval, and p2t is the p-value for the test, testing eta equals 0.
Michelle, what was the 4 again? I didn't catch that.
I have 4 types of data, which I sent a Word file earlier in the week that described the 4 kinds, and I will get to them in a minute.
Okay. No, I'm just trying to match up numbers with what they represent.
We have 3 dimensions, the 3,000 to 3,000 trials.
Right.
The 14 is the list I'm about to go through, and then underneath you'll see there's another dim names res array 3. That's the 4 kinds of data. We just haven't got there yet.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
So those first 4 things are for a two-sample t-test on the post scores, hence 2t. The next one says dt because we took the differences between the pre and the post for each of the groups, the control and treatment groups, and then did a two-sample t-test on the differences. So hence either dt, dt lower, dt higher, and the p-value from the differences test. Then I did a linear model of, well, I actually did post on pre, which I know that's what Candace really likes to see. I've also made a note inside the comments. You can actually do it slightly more efficiently if you actually do the differences on the pre. You get exactly the same results. But post on pre is more transparent for people who feel they want to see post on pre. So then what you will see is using the linear model, which is Y regressed on the pre-score plus an indicator for the treatment. You get an estimate for eta, eta R for eta regression. I've got the standard error and the p-value for the test, eta equals 0. And I looked at the slope for the pre because one of the reasons we're doing this is to show that sometimes this is appropriate, although when you do the regression, beta won't appear to be 1. So beta R is the regression estimate for beta, SEB is the standard error for beta, and PB is the test that beta equals 1. This is not the p-value you pull off the regression, which is the test for beta equals 0, which is why the code becomes a little inefficient because I had to stop and write it out as the test for beta equals 1.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, third dimension. There's 4 lots of data. The first one called true is the one that we actually described to start with in the table that Michael sent around several months ago. It's just nicely well-behaved data. Y is equal to omega plus, I called it beta times the pre because I need delta for something else. I thought it was more like the regular literature, plus an error which is independent of the pre. The truncated one says we've truncated it to match the Likert scale. So anything 7 or higher becomes 7. Anything 1 or lower becomes 1. OBS is for observed. In practice, you don't get that well-behaved data. You get measurement error on both X and Y. So the observed has got a measurement error, delta added to both X and Y. And trunk observed...
And is it always the same amount? I guess if it's delta for both, it would be.
It is in this one. Because it's one of the things they set up in the initial setup file, setup code set one. I mean, they don't have to be, but that wasn't... I had 20 simulations without varying delta.
Right.
And right now, delta for Y and delta. Delta for the pre and delta for the post are the same, and that assumes the retest reliability is the same on the pre and the post.
Now, wait, the function is the same or the value is the same?
the value of the coefficient for the test-retest reliability.
The value for the reliability, but it doesn't mean that if one of them is off by 0.01, the other one will be off by 0.01.
Oh, no, absolutely
okay,
not.
Yeah,
no, no, they just have the same distribution.
Okay, yeah, okay, good. Yeah.
No, the way it would be in real life, you had a random error with a...
No, I mean, I'm not saying I don't trust you. This is fantastic stuff.
No, it's good to check.
That's the kind of error I would have made by accident or something, and I just want to make sure we're thinking about that.
There will be lots of errors, I'm sure, because I already found several places I had square roots missing or in the wrong place. I think I fixed all of those yesterday. I spent all yesterday reading through the code and fixing things.
Great.
But I'm sure there are other things you're going to pick up. But, no, that one's okay. I really have done a lot of simulations. So. Where am I down to?
So you said the observed, the third of the four.
And the last one, after you've added the measurement error, you truncate it. So it's got measurement error on, and it's truncated down to be between 1 and 7.
Okay.
Okay. Loop estimates code, which we can look at in a minute, literally generates those that data and then does the tests and gets the results. And it puts the results into that result array that you see above. It saves all the things that you see listed in those names. Then I have a list that saves each of these arrays because I wasn't sure what we were going to want to do or what plots we'd want to do, and this is why R has overflowed, because each of these arrays is big, and then there's 20 of those, and it's saving everything to many decimal places. I wasn't quite ready to round, so it's
right.
Probably
so this is, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to follow along while you're talking. This is the save ADA hat section on the second page.
No, keep going down SimCode set 1. Oh, mine's all on one page. You're in Word. Yours is probably...
Oh, yeah, sorry, I'm in Word.
Pages. Okay.
This is the save ADA hat section in the loop estimate code, where it says res array.
We have setup array for results, and then it says run loop to get results. That's loop estimate code.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll look at that in a moment. But it fills in those values you see above in res array. It calculates each of those things. The eta 2t, the lower and upper bounds, the p-value, et cetera. It does those 14 calculations and sticks them in the appropriate row of res array.
Okay.
It does it for each set of data. So it actually makes a 14x4 matrix and then puts that next to the appropriate sim number from that first dimension.
Okay.
Then I saved each of these into a list in case I needed to go back to them. So that res array set one is a list. It's an R list, and for each simulation, that results array gets saved. However, I think that is why I couldn't reopen R. I think that either it's too much for R to handle, or it's too much for my current computer account to handle because I have so much other stuff there. And I will try and find that out tomorrow and let you know. When it came back, there's always the chance that either the computer's blipped or there was a problem in the code somewhere. So res array starts off by being set to everything being NA,
mm-hmm.
and this is to check that they're not NAs. If there's an NA in there, when you do the logical thing, res array greater than 0 is an R logical vector. It has
mm-hmm.
trues and falses in.
Mm-hmm.
If it finds NAs there, when you try and sum it, you get an NA for that result. So it says, if this thing is greater than 0, either that thing will be a positive integer or it will be an NA. If it's an NA, it knows there's a problem. If there's not an NA, if that thing's greater than 0, then you're okay and you know everything's going on all right. And if there's a problem, it prints a warning error.
Great.
So it comes out warning error in result sim number.
That's
like that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. If there's not a problem, you can keep going and you can actually tabulate your results. And there's four sets of code. The first two are almost identical, but one is the result for the 2T and one is for the DT, and the next two are almost identical. They're both from regression, and that's where we could have done a loop, but I was trying to keep everything transparent, and it would have only been a loop of length 2.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't any plot code yet, and that's why it's got comment signs at the side. Okay? So this is the thing that basically runs through each of the simulations in turn, and that's why it gets called from all code set 1. One of the reasons I've been sourcing rather than writing functions is previously I found when I put things in functions, sometimes the seed changed in S+. I don't know if that would happen in R, but I think it's better to be safe.
Okay,
what else do I have?
So this is set 1.
Yes. This, I'm assuming we'll have other sets. Actually, it's set 1A, because 1B I was going to have different reliability coefficients.
Okay.
So 1A had this worst-case scenario reliability. Like, I'm sure ours is nothing like that, but it's the absolute worst you could get, so it'll have the most dramatic effect on our results.
Okay.
So, I mean, as long as ETA is zero, it is not really going to have an effect, because it has the same effect on both the control group and the treatment group. So the two distributions for the post-score should still be the same distribution. So, you know, we should still be finding ETAs at zero. Okay, you should have one called loop estimate code.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one that I'm a little concerned there might be errors in, and I'm not sure the one in front of me here is the most recent. I don't think I reprinted it off. I sent it to you. I'll run through and we'll see if you have anything different. I've got some comments which I hope have been commented out of yours because they're not needed. I have a bit that prints the date. I don't know if that's the same in our when you on a PC, and I can't remember if I took it out or not. I often print the time to see how long things were taking.
Yeah, there was a print date statement in there.
Okay. I don't know whether that's the same on Unix as it is on a PC or not. Then JJ is going to go through the trials. And it either said loop start, loop end, or 1 to 3,000, depending which version this was when I sent it to you. At one point, I wasn't sure how long it would take, but actually the loop only takes 10 or 15 seconds, so there's no problem at all.
Great.
It generates the two pre-scores, N1 and N2, with the appropriate mean and standard deviation. Then we get the true post-scores. So why is the treatment group with ETA, except ETA 0? So where have I got this? Y1 post is... omega plus beta 1 times x pre. Beta 1 is 1. I just coded it so we can put other beta values in later if we want. Omega is the thing that we just set, and actually it was set to minus 1 for the first simulation. And then the R norm is to allow for the fact that every student's different. So we've got N1 with a mean of 0 and a standard deviation for epsilon, so that's the epsilon getting added on. Then Y2 post includes eta. That has been coded in a 0. And then again, beta 1, x2 pre, and then again a random error. Then we truncated it. So you first of all, you take the pre-score the way it is. Whenever it's greater than 7, again, that's a logical vector, that x1 trunk greater than 7 inside the square bracket. It picks out all the values greater than 7, and it sets them to 7. Then it takes the ones that are less than 1 using a logical vector inside the square bracket and sets them to 1. And then it does the same thing for x2 and then for y1 and y2. Okay, flip the page. This time it added delta, and again, the delta is the same distribution, but it's the same. It's going to be different every time. There's an R norm each time. It's generating new random normal variates for the two pre-scores and the two post-scores. So then we get the observed scores. Then it goes back. There's the same idea for truncating all of those. If it's greater than 7, it sets it to 7. If it's less than 1, it sets it to 1. And it says, compare the post-scores group 1 versus group 2. So there's 40 tests there on the post-scores for the original data, the Y2, Y1 post, the truncated data, the observed data, and the observed truncated data. Then it does the ETA hat, the 95% confidence interval, and the p-value. So those get put into ResArray. JJ is the trial that we're on. The estimate is the mean of Y2 minus the mean of Y1. The upper and lower confidence intervals, you pull them off with that dollar sign. I don't know how familiar you are with R, but when you do a t-test, everything, all the things you need, you attach to the end of the name of your test with a dollar sign and the thing you want to pick up.
Right.
So that picks up the upper and lower bound, and it picks up the p-value. Then it does exactly the same thing for the truncated data, the observed data, and the truncated observed data. So, again, I'm sure there's ways we could loop this to make it more efficient, but this is really transparent as to what's going on.
And you're saying each loop takes 10 or 15 seconds to run anyway, so...
Well, the 3,000 took 10 to 15 seconds.
Right, so...
So
yeah.
It doesn't matter that it's transparent.
I mean, the total time it takes for it to run everything is how long?
About half a minute, I think.
Yeah, I mean...
It depends how many other people are on the system at the time.
Yeah, but I mean, if you were talking about 30 hours, I'd be concerned about a 10% reduction in time or a 50% reduction in time. But 30 seconds, I don't care if we make it more efficient.
Oh, and it might not even reduce it in time. It just might make it easier to read.
Yeah.
Because loops often aren't actually faster in RNS Plus.
Right, right.
They're just nice to write.
But in my mind, we don't even need to make anything more efficient, even if we're going to be running this a whole bunch of times.
Okay. Good.
I mean, unless we're multiplying it by 1,000. You know, unless we're doing this 1,000 times over. In which case, 30,000 seconds get to be non-negligible.
Yeah.
But
that's when you run things overnight, I know. But we don't have that problem right here.
Right.
Then I've calculated the gains, because this was our second one. It was to do the test on the changes or the differences or the gains or whatever we want to call them. So you just go through and do the subtraction to set up your gain scores for the control and treatment group for each of the four lots of data. Then you do the t-test on the two-sample t-test on the two gains for the treatment versus the control group. And then you go through and you save everything just like you did before, except this time they've got D's instead of 2's all the way through. So we're saving the estimate, the confidence interval, the p-value for each of those. Then we keep going down and we'll come to the linear model. I'm sorry, I seem to have a D missing from model. And also the coefficient beta of the pre-score. One of the papers that I think Candace has sent you is very nice when it talks about this thing about the coefficient being 1, because it points out that it's the coefficient of the true data that we don't see. We always see truncated observed data where beta isn't 1, but in fact, if you have good reason to believe the true coefficient is 1, which I don't believe for the SAT scores, but if you do, then you can be quite comfortable doing these sort of rather boring things with gain scores, which are good for ETA anyway, because we're looking at the difference between the two groups. So it seems it was important we mentioned that, since we know that it's in the SMO report and it comes up. So I also went through and I did everything for both ETA and for beta. So you now want to regress on an indicator variable for the treatment, so you have to stack your data. So X pre is the first group followed by the second. Y post, again, is the first group followed by the second. Same for the truncated data. I have to flip a page here. And then the observed data and the observed truncated data. Then I assigned the four linear models to the appropriate data. Treat I is an indicator variable that is 1 for the treatment group and 0 for the control group. Then we save all the estimates, standard errors, and p-values. So ETA picks up the, hang on, summary LM true coefficients. Okay, that's the way you pull out the coefficients from LM true when you're in R. I guess there's not much else I can say. So the coefficient treat I, we want to get the estimate. When you print it on the screen, actually the LM, it's really obvious what you're pulling out. Here it looks quite mysterious, but this will pull out the estimate, the standard error, and the p-value for the coefficient for the treatment indicator, and that is ETA. This is getting the right thing.
The estimate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then it does it for the truncated data, the observed data, and the truncated observed data. And by now you're probably onto a new page, and it does it for beta. With beta, we want to test beta equals 1, but the p-value is going to be for beta equals 0. So you need to actually pull out beta hat, the standard error, figure out the value of the t, get the degrees of freedom, and then actually get the p-value, which is what you see in the next bit of code. Now, I'm just a bit worried about this one. T gets 1 minus beta hat over standard error. Then we want to get... Oh, isn't there twice, depending on whether T is positive or negative, that you calculate your p-value slightly differently? So the first one says if you've got a negative test statistic, it's just twice the probability that you'd be less than or equal to that. And then it says if it's greater than that, make it negative and do twice it. The negative value. So that's figuring out the p-value. It then saves the beta hat,
so,
standard error. And
right. I mean, that would be the same just putting absolute value of TB.
Then you have to do 1 minus, that PT gives you the left-hand area.
Right.
And if you use absolute value, you'll get a positive 1, and then you'll have to do 1 minus that PT.
Also make it double.
It.
to make it negative absolute value. I mean, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, you can. You could also do that with negative absolute value.
Right.
Again, I went for transparency.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's fine.
And even going for transparency, if somebody's not that familiar with R, I think it's still quite an effort to follow what's going on.
Should we ask Candace?
I'm just here. I'm
yeah,
not...
no, I'm kidding. Yeah. No, even with knowing R, we're still, you know, we're going through this at a fast pace. I'm going to have to go back and look
yes.
through it again myself.
Definitely. The other thing I found was that it's a lot of my S code doesn't work in R. Phil, it's such a good thing you didn't try to use that code I sent you. It was basically worthless.
Okay, good. Good to know now. Yeah.
Really good you didn't do anything. I would have felt so bad afterwards. I couldn't believe how many things that work in S are different in R.
Hmm.
Okay, then it's basically just it repeats for the different kinds of data. Inside those little number signs, I did show the more efficient but less transparent way of getting this. If you use the gains instead of the post, you can get at it more efficiently, and you'll get exactly the same results.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as obvious when people are very big on saying is the coefficient one. You don't see it in front of your eyes. So, I mean,
right.
this is going to be identical. Then it just keeps going, the observed data. You go through exactly the same thing again, and then the observed truncated data. It's just basically repeating the same code every time. Okay, that gets the stuff you want. And then there are four sets of results, but some of these, again, are almost identical. The 2T for the two sample and the DT for the difference. I mean, there's hardly it. Those two files are almost identical. So it goes in and picks out the bias, the variance, the mean square error, the standard deviation for the estimate across the 3,000 trials. So, for example, where it says bias.etoget mean res array, gap, comma, means it takes all 3,000 trials.
Is this
and then it's for the
SIM 1 or SIM 8, Michelle?
I'm sorry?
Which result file
oh,
is this?
I went for the 2T because that's the one that I call first. It's
not the tables yet. It's the results code.
Oh, the results code.
Oh, okay. I jumped to the
and
table.
I think they got attached in alphabetical order, which is not the order that I actually call them in.
Okay.
So it's results 2T SIM code.
Got it.
Results for the two-sample t-test on the post-course the simulation.
I went to the results.
I know. There's a lot of different code here. Okay. Collect results for the true data. And once we've done that, then you just do the same thing for the other data. So the bias is the mean across the trials of the different estimates for the true data, I mean, minus the true value of eta. The variance is the variance of the estimates. The mean square error is the variance plus the bias. I think the original thing I sent around on Monday might have had a minus sign instead of a plus sign there. I'm not sure. But anyway, obviously it ought to be a plus. Then I looked at the p-values. Some of this code, when we change eta, will have to be extended. Because it's zero, you can match up confidence levels and p-values, which I know we're not going to be able to do as soon as we take eta off zero, but I wanted to actually get it done. So calculate the true significance levels for nominal 5 and 1%. So you look at the number of trials that are finding 5% significant. You'd like it to be about 5%, and in fact it is because we've got everything zero and everything's very well behaved. So you have the p-hat for 0.05 as a proportion that have a p-value less than or equal to 0.05 or 5% divided by the number of trials. Then I did a binomial based on this p-hat. I did, you know, the p-hat plus or minus z-star root, whatever it is, p-hat 1 minus p-hat over n, and did a confidence interval for the what would happen if we did, you know, a zillion trials. And they consistently include 0.05, which is what we want to be sure happens. Then did the same thing for 1%. And then because eta is 0, that we can use the p-values to get the coverage probabilities, but in future, when eta is not zero, we'll have to add code there. I probably should have put a comment in that said need to add code when we change eta. Then I got the mean width for the 95%. Because these are all done with a T interval, we don't need to do 99 because they just both boost up by an appropriate proportion when you go from the critical value for 95 to 99.
Right.
Okay, then I put these into the sum array, which is the thing that saves all the summaries of the results. And sum array for this sim number picks out those 13 things and saves them. So that's how I printed the tables later. I took them from some array. Also, because it's an array, we can change the way we do things. We don't have to, you know, go across true. We could choose, like, the p-values and then take it across to different lots of data. And we can assemble those tables in many different ways because it's set up in an array. And I think the other pages just do the same thing, yeah, for the truncated data, then repeat it all through for the observed data, then do it for observed truncated data. Again, if you have a chance to look through this, I'm pretty sure everything got changed appropriately, but I did do some cut and paste at this point. But I did try to be really careful to make sure everything got updated where it should have got updated. I think we're good. I mean, I checked through a couple of times. Oh, and also when I got the table, the things, they matched what they ought to be. Things went down where they should go down, and they go up where they should go up. So results two for the DT is almost identical. It's just all the twos become Ds. Do you want me to go through the results for the regression code? We've got a result beta R and a result beta R.
Can you remind me what the difference is between them?
Okay. Because I now got a linear model.
I want to go through the code anyway myself, just to like look at it.
Right.
But what's the difference between the four results codes?
This is based on a linear model. This is Y regressed, the post regressed on the pre plus the treatment.
Okay.
And this is for the estimates for eta, which would be the coefficient for the treatment. And then it goes through doing beta, which is the coefficient for the pre. And other than that, it's picking up the same kind of things we picked up before. You don't automatically get a confidence interval, so I would have had to stop and calculate it. So I just saved the standard error and the p-value, which are going to give us the width, and we'll get the coverage probability because of the true value being zero for eta. And in beta, it is the p for the test of beta equals 1. So again, you get the coverage probability from the p-values. So a lot of it is very similar to the one that we just looked at, but it pulls things from a linear model rather than from a t-test.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't think we'd gain a lot by going quickly line by line. I think it's you'd gain by reading through it in detail.
Right.
It's basically going to do what the other one did, but for the other methods, for the remaining two methods. So we get three lots of results for eta, and we also get one set of results for the coefficient, the beta coefficient. Okay, it's obvious these p-values are uniform. I did not do a test, but I can go back in and do a test if you like. I mean, the important things, obviously, are the 0.01 and the 0.05, and in fact, if it became non-uniform at the other end of the distribution, we wouldn't care. But, I mean, it is uniform, and it's completely obvious from the plot. And also, I mean, the fact that the code's working.
Right.
But if anybody wants a test, then it's really easy to code in a test. Okay, nobody's jumping for one, so we won't worry yet. Mm-hmm. Okay, you then have some tables, and I'm slightly, my only concern about the table is I had to rerun the code a couple of times. I had some square roots in the wrong place. And then lost the data. I think the things I sent you really are the true most recent ones I did. I know the ones from the middle of yesterday weren't, and that's my only concern. And I don't have a print of the most recent ones. So I'm going to have to pull them up on the screen. When I had them, the ones I had yesterday, which I made pretty, I split them all up so they were easy to read, but I really didn't have time to do that again today because I was trying to redo everything in one day. I just have to find my email. Where will they be? Excellent.
So we're looking at the tables now?
Yeah. Well, I'm not for a minute because I've got to get them.
So it looks to me like, I mean, we're getting, you know, if I look at coverage probabilities of 95% confidence intervals or 99% as just, you know, one measure, but the p-values are saying the same thing.
Yeah.
They're all doing what they're supposed to do.
Well, I'm seeing something a little weird in the beta one, the last set.
Oh, well, that should be weird, because beta isn't going to be 1 when you at the beta 1 is between the true values. Let me just pull one up.
Okay.
So remind me, did you have table sum set 1 asym 1? Is that one of the ones that you've
got? Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, I know what the problem is. I'm just going to have to put my phone down a minute. I'm not in this a very nice way. Well, let me cut and paste. I'm having to retype everything. Hold on.
I'm going to have to go through this a little bit slower and wrap my head around all of it.
It's good stuff.
It is good. I mean, I also love the error checks. Something that I normally don't put in, just kind of do myself.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to steal that for the next batch of simulations, if I ever need to run them.
Right. Yeah, I'm still trying to wrap my head around what each model is, to understand whether the results are consistent with what we were expecting to get. So, I mean, just to show you guys while Michelle's doing that, what I was looking at, if you look at the...
Okay, I've got
table.
One up.
Are you with us?
Yes.
Okay, great.
As I said, yesterday I did pretty this up, but I just didn't have time. So you should... I even had stuff with all the information across the top telling you what all the initial values were, but when I redid it, I just didn't have time to go in and retype that. This is what came straight from R based on my printing code. So as a result for Sim 1, this is the t-test on the post scores. If you go down 4 lines and then make a gap, if you've got this on a screen, or draw a line across, the top part is the bias, the variance, the mean square error, and the standard deviation. This is for the estimate.
The one I have has labels on it.
Okay, good. And then going across, you get the true data, the observed, and the truncated observed. And, I mean, they're all close to 0 for the bias, which they ought to be, because theoretically the bias should be 0. For the variance, the truncated will be less, because when you truncate the data, the post scores have a lower variance. So when you do the test, you get a lower standard error and lower variances on your estimates.
Okay.
The observed data will be greater than the true data, because, again, we've added error, so the post scores have greater variance. So when you do your test, you get more variance in your estimates. And, again, when you truncate, it will drop down a little bit. So the truncated observed is less than the observed, which is what it ought to be. And then the standard deviation is just the square root of the variance. Now, I mean, this doesn't guarantee that the code, well, we won't find errors in it, but it says at least it's doing things the way we'd expect it to happen.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The 95s are fairly close to 95, and the 99s are fairly close to 99. The width of the intervals is basically reflecting the same thing as we saw in the variances, that they'll be a little smaller in the truncated data because the post scores had variance that was smaller. It goes up for the observed and then down again for the truncated observed. This gives us this illusion that the truncation is good. As soon as eta is not 0, this truncation and stuff is going to mess us up. So I think although it looks like we're better off, you know, we're not losing it. Are you getting a bunch of beeps? I don't know whether it's just my phone.
Is that someone call waiting or something?
Not me.
I don't know.
So, and remind me, Michelle, so I'm trying to think in my mind how much truncation there is. What were the mean and standard deviation?
Okay. This one, the truncation happens very little because eta is 0. The mean was 3.
Yeah.
It's going between 1 and 7, so there's not much. There's a little bit at the lower end. There's a few things that are more
so the standard deviation was 1, right?
Below. Yeah. That's one,
okay.
One reason the standard deviation is 1, apart from the fact that it was in the true, you know, the real, in the SATs scores. But the SAT scores, of course, are truncated observed data.
Uh-huh. So we're talking about, I'm going to estimate, you know, 0.15% on the lower end, more than 3 standard deviations, and you have to be more than 4 standard deviations on the higher end to be truncated.
It's 2 standard deviations on the lower end. It's 3 down to...
Oh, I'm sorry. 2 standard deviations on the low end and 4 on the higher end.
4 on the higher end, yes.
Okay, so 2.5%. 2.3% on the low end and pretty small on the high end.
It's only the odd, because it's only n equals 30, you don't pick up very much. But, I mean, it is enough that we're seeing a change.
Right. I mean, it would be interesting to also quantify that of what if we made the mean 2 instead of 3, where we're allowing for a lot more truncation.
Yeah, you will, because there's one up at 6 at the other end. And six,
oh, there is. Okay, great.
With an omega of plus 1, it'd be like going down 1. But
sure.
In our data, we got things between 3 and 6, so that seemed reasonable to use for the means.
Right.
And with a 6, we wouldn't have gone up 1, but I included that so we could see the more extreme effects of the truncation.
Right.
And as soon as we add on eta, then if something started at 6 and then had, you know, an eta on top of that, it could be at 7 already, and it could be losing half the data.
Right.
So, I mean, it will kick in later on. It just doesn't kick in very much right now.
It would be interesting, thinking later on, whether we could actually produce a model or, you know, or either a table or a model that talks about how much does truncation impact the variance based on where we are relative
yes.
to the limits.
Yes.
You could actually think about a nice picture, you know, of on a scale from 1 to 7, assuming sigma equals 1, how much truncation is there for every value of 1 through 7?
Hmm.
Right? Is that clear?
I'm not quite sure how you were measuring your truncation, but I get the idea that it would be nice to have some sort of either picture or table that comes.
Yeah, I mean, talk about, you know,
yeah.
we see the variance for the truncated versus the variance for the non-truncated. So we could even have two lines on it showing what the variance of the non-truncated is, and it should be the same no matter what the value of mu x is, right?
Yes, and it
whereas it'll be changing a
yes.
lot, so you can show those two lines and look to see how different they are when,
yes.
you know, the
yes.
closer you are to the limits of truncation.
Yes. And when we start off with the mean at 4, we should get hardly any truncation. Because it would be 3 standard deviations.
Right.
We've only got 30 scores, so we may well find the trunk and the true maybe coming out exactly the same. Mostly I only had the first simulation that I was working with a lot, so I haven't looked at all the others. And then when I
right.
went back in today, of course, I couldn't pick up my R variables, which was really annoying. So.
Oh, no.
But, I mean, it doesn't take that long to run the whole thing.
You know, and I think this is great. I mean, this is exactly what we want to start with, just the code that gets us started to enable us to answer questions that we want.
That's right. Because then we don't have to take these same 20 values. We can choose out a few that we think are typical and then start changing eta and changing other things.
Right.
And I have
right.
actually done stuff with a different reliability coefficient, but I don't have any of it available to show you.
Okay.
So then we've got the p's going across. Again, they're all around 0.05, which they ought to be. And then the confidence intervals are all such that we wouldn't reject 0.05 if we were doing it for a long time, which, again, is what we want to see.
Right.
And again, I think once we start putting in values of eta, we'll find that the true and the observed, that shouldn't make any difference, but we'll find that with the truncated data, things start. They may have an effect. I really find that hard to predict, though. I mean, obviously, it would have a big effect on the beta, all of them, but I don't know what's going to happen to the eta. But it would make sense that the truncation must have some kind of an impact, because as eta is big and it pulls, you know, up over the 7, you'll start getting a big effect on your post scores for the treatment group, which isn't happening in the non-treatment group.
Right.
So who knows what will happen. Then basically it does the same thing for the using the score with the differences. I'm just putting some extra spaces in here so I can read it easily on the screen. It's going to be slightly better. Now, these tables right now are comparing the 4 kinds of data, but we can redo them fairly easily. So rather than comparing the data, they'd compare like the 2T with the differences with the regression.
Right,
Which would be nice to see. I just haven't had a chance to play with how to do
that. Yeah,
no,
I think that's right. We want to look at it in each dimension and
that's
see
right.
which ones are good and which ones are bad
yeah.
and then kind of report
yeah.
on that.
That's right. So this is essentially the same set of stuff but for the differences. But, I mean, the variances in the MSE will be a little better. And because it's unbiased, the MSE and the variances are matching up anyway. But they should all be slightly lower than they were on the one before, and I think they are. I can't get them on the screen at the same time. But the last time I looked, they were.
Right.
Then it does the same thing for the regression. The regression should be... Oh, what am I missing? Oh, there it is. Okay. It won't be quite as good as the one on the differences because there's an extra degree of freedom got used up because it estimates omega as well and some other stuff. But it's pretty good, and it should be better, and it is better than if you just do the 2 post scores without looking at the pre at all. I mean, the variances in the MSEs are slightly better.
Mm-hmm.
But the next one, we're looking at beta now, down at the bottom. So that's more.
So now we're changing the relationship that the pre-score has with the post-score.
Beta is equal to 1. That doesn't change at all. It will change when we do the different regressions, because only the true score can reflect that. The true score, the real data, the real relationship between the pre and post scores is that the change or the increase is independent of the pre-score, and that coefficient is 1.
However, okay, I see.
Right. Once you truncate the data, it'll pull the slope down. And when you add the measurement error in, you get regression to the mean, and it will pull the slope down.
So I am sure
if we wrote out, I haven't actually done it, what the slope ought to be for that observed data, I mean, I'm sure it would work. I mean, you can figure out what it ought to be.
Well, it should be one, and then the bias says the average, right? So it's 0.779, is that right, for truncated?
Bias truncated, yeah. It's going to be, we're going to get big biases. Because
right, so, but I'm saying if we were to estimate the slope, the slope estimate would be 0.779. That's what the negative 0.221 bias means, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how far off one it is. Yes,
right.
It's what you just said. Sorry, I was looking on a different row.
Yeah, no, that's fine. So for the,
Yeah.
So if we're trying to estimate the pre-post impact, right, okay.
But we're not. We're trying to estimate the treatment, and that's why it's
ADA.
Okay.
We're trying to estimate ADA. So,
yes.
Right, I see. Right.
That's why it's okay. The reason this is important is because we have things like the Smur report that says if when you do your regression, and we'd be in that final column, we've got truncated observed data, and you don't get a 1, you shouldn't look at the change scores. But in fact, our test with the change scores, it's fine because we're looking at the treatment thing. And that seems to be what the whole of Bernardo's book is about. It's about estimating treatment effects. It's not about estimating the difference between the pre and the post. And because we're estimating eta, we're okay.
Right.
Although beta is not going to be 1 because we've got truncated observed data and we're going to be quite a bit off. And if we do a test to see if it's 1, it's going to tell us it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I included this. And one of the papers that I think Candace sent you actually talks about that. It talks about the fact that if that true relationship that we can't get our hands on is 1, and we have a good reason to believe it's 1, then these would be okay things to do for all kinds of things. We could be not only estimating eta. If you've got data with measurement error, you can estimate omega perfectly well as well. Okay, so this goes through beta, and what it shows is that you won't be getting 1 with the data you find in real life because it is truncated and it does have measurement error, and that doesn't necessarily mean you should panic. I do think for the SATS data that the true beta is probably less than 1, but, I mean, the point is that you can't automatically say that these methods don't work because when you do the regression, you don't get a 1. So that's why it's in there. So we have 3 lots that compare eta. And it would be nice to redo those tables so we could compare across. But, I mean, the one for beta, there's no reason to do it any other way unless we want to compare when we change the values of omega and when we change, the values of mu x. And, again, because of the way it's an array, I think we'll be able to do that.
Right. But I think that's right. I think that once we've understood the impact that the estimates of beta have, like we have at the last part of this SIM1A, the table we're looking at, we don't then need to also look at it in other dimensions. Because we're seeing the changes and we're explaining.
Yeah, we know what happens. Yes.
You know, because again, I think what would be really nice to come out of this paper is, you know, okay, let's talk about the beta coefficients, let's talk about the eta coefficients, and then let's talk about all the other, you know, changes that we could make. You know, and say here's how it affects the model. We have a nice story about here's how the truncation and the measurement error affects the beta estimates.
Yeah, and this is for good. Remember, this is with other things being 0. This is with no treatment going on right now.
Oh, this is 80 equals 0?
80 equals 0.
Oh, I see.
Now, changing eta, if we just add on a constant for eta, that's not going to change these results for the beta coefficient. It's just going to go in and out.
I'm not sure I completely agree with that because it changes how much truncation there is. If we make eta 1, there's less truncation. If we make eta negative 1, there's more truncation.
Oh, right. Thank you.
Right?
Yes.
And in general, that's right.
Yes. It's right for the true data, but it's not right for the other ones.
Right.
Yeah, no, it will. Yeah, you're right. The truncation will change it. It shouldn't affect the observed data. As long as we're just adding on a constant. The one for the observed data should stay the same, but the truncated ones are going to change.
Well, but based on that statement, why is the observed such a bad predictor then?
You mean why is beta not? So that is regression to the mean. That's what makes things regress to the mean. It's because we have measurement error. That's what you're seeing. That slope's been pulled down.
Okay, so the difference between true and truncation is due to...
the fact we've made it fit in Likert scale.
The fact that, right, exactly.
Above 7 and below 1.
The difference between true and observed is regression to the mean.
Yes. We've got measurement error in there, and it's making it regress towards the mean.
Okay, I think that, I mean, to me, that's a nice, clear statement of the findings.
I'm not sure that we need, I mean, the other tables are the same thing. I included 8 because I think that's the one where omega is 0 and the mean is 4, so everything's slap bang in the middle. And SIM20, which I don't even have in R anymore because it's part of the data that got lost, was the one that was up at 6, so it was the one that where the truncation might have a little bit more of an impact. But, I mean, it's going to have a huge impact once we start adding eters on because the SIM20 has a mean of 6 to start with. So when you have, like, an omega of 1, that's going to pull it way up, and that's that very last one is the one that has the omega of 1. But I mean, we're going to see the same kind of patterns. I don't think going through it in a group here is going to gain us anything.
Right.
I mean, you'll see the same sort of patterns. It's going to be more extreme in that one.
SIM20 looks somewhat similar to the SIM1.
Yeah, it's very similar. It's at the other end, but because instead of starting like 3 is 2 up, 6 is only 1 down from 7, the truncation should have a little bit more of an effect on it. I can't look at them at the same time because I'm on the screen.
Yeah, you know what? I agree with your statements, but I'm not seeing that in the results. It actually looks like there was a mistake in the SIM20 printout.
Oh, because, there might be.
That's, because it's actually exactly
okay.
The same table.
Oh, shoot. All right, ignore it. I can get it back because I can do the same things I did today. I can run R, and then I can do it from outside before I lose the data. I'm almost
going to talk to
the IT guy.
So. It even says at the top results from SIM1, so I think that was just an error in the...
Sorry about that.
That's fine. That's...
Yeah, it may be when I went in and printed. I was getting slightly panicky because of the fact I'd lost the data twice today. So then I had to go back and rerun, excuse me, the whole thing again.
Right.
I will talk to our IT guy tomorrow because it could just be that my computer account is very full and that if I move over and use a different part of the machine, I may be okay or he may be able to give me some extra space,
right,
which he's already done several times. Or maybe I can, I don't want to delete off, but I maybe can move something onto one of our temporary drives. So.
Okay.
Do something that will make it work. I'll let you know when I know.
Okay,
do we know, well, you probably don't. You might want to try and find out for your version of R what random number generator it uses.
Okay.
I believe that ours is something called a Mersenne twister, because that's apparently the R default, but there's a whole bunch of different ones.
Hmm.
And some of them are best behaved.
What's it called?
Mess, something like M-E-R-S-E-N-N, I think, is Mersenne twister.
Okay.
That's something we should, you know, we need to check into if we're reporting the results, but I would actually hope that we could do independent confirmations that irregardless of the random selection process, we'd still get about the same results.
Oh, yes, we should. I just, of course, if you want to replicate something.
Right, right.
Then you're not going to be able to replicate it unless you have the same random number generator.
Right, okay.
Or if something goes wrong, I had simulation number 5 was missing for some reason. No, it turned out it was actually because I'd failed to source it in the old code, so I just went back and ran the whole thing from the beginning. But at first, I did stop and run 4 and then have a look to see what had happened.
Right. Okay.
I was able to do. Okay. That's it anyway. The only other thing is some plots that look like straight lines. I mean, I think all we have to say is they're all straight lines, and here's one example.
Right, right, right.
I mean,
because
we know theoretically they ought to be straight lines. I mean, the
right.
thing that's going to be weird is beta, and that's not in there. We're going to get ones that aren't straight lines there. And once we start putting eta equal to values, we shouldn't be getting straight lines. You know, we should be seeing the power coming in.
Right. Yeah.
And then
that's
we
great.
Might have a plot that's worth putting up, because... You know, we can certainly, I guess, you can compare the power. I guess some of them will look better than others. It's kind of obvious, actually, by the width of the confidence intervals and the variances and things. But, I mean, we can do plots that show that some are obviously doing much better. You know, they're kind of crawling along. When you folks do normal quantile plots or uniform quantile plots, books do not seem to be consistent as to which axis they put the quantiles on and which axis they put the data on. Do you
have any patterns? I've noticed that as well.
Yeah, it's not even consistent in intro stats books. And I think Minitab actually switched from one version to another.
Oh, really?
I know that I had these handouts, and I had them on an overhead, and I had to kind of turn it upside down and re-photocopy it to switch all the things around. It was quite bizarre.
I tend to always put the observed on the x-axis and
okay.
the expected on the y.
Okay, well, why don't I switch them? Because they're not that way around right now, I don't think. I think the quantiles are on the horizontal.
I have no real reason
the way
why
I
always do that.
The way I think is actually R by normal quantile. So it actually does it the other way, but it doesn't. I mean, as long as you can read them. I mean, the point is we're looking for linearity, and any deviations from linearity are yeah. notable, and then you just have to look at which is on which axis to know which direction it is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Okay, that's what I did.
It's actually a great exam question to check students who only partially know what they're doing.
yes.
Sorry, you can take exam week next week, but... So I actually have to go in a few minutes because I have a meeting with some students that I need
okay.
to have. This is fantastic. Michelle, thank you for doing this. You know, it was, you know, a quick run through, but we got through it all in an hour, so that's great. I'm going to have to go back and just,
okay.
you know, kind of step through it slowly
yeah.
myself and make sure that it all makes sense
yeah.
in what, you know,
sure.
both
and
the
you
code
may find errors,
and also
in which case,
matching
let me
it
know,
to.
And I'll redo it. I'd also, it would be pretty easy for me with this to just change ETA and run a couple of things with new ETAs, but I'm not offering now to do more than that. I have a conference at the end of May when I'm presenting on some other data that Candace and I are working on. So I
okay.
absolutely have to put my attention in getting that together because it's like the last week of May and it's not ready yet. So.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
But this is great. Thanks, Michelle.
Okay.
So where do we want to go next in the next few minutes? Where should we set up a meeting again for a little while? I mean, I guess our first official deadline for what we're doing is the presentation that I'm doing at JSM in August.
That's right.
And so it sounds like if Michelle is busy, maybe the right thing is for one of us to take the next stab at it. That puts
well, what is the next stab? Do we know for...
So for me, the next step is one or probably even better yet, both of us, to kind of go through the code and just check it.
Okay.
That would be a really good step.
And I'm gonna also say and learn from it. You know, we were both saying while you were gone, Michelle, that we like the error checking that we often don't do enough of, where it actually spits out a comment if there's an error instead of just bombs itself.
Yeah.
Anyway, so for me, the next step is to just read through it and for my own sake and also for the sake of the integrity of the code, just to verify that it's all working
yeah.
the way we all expected it to give us all a deeper understanding of what's there.
Okay.
That's my sense of it.
Particularly
and then I think we really need to...
coefficient. That was
I'm
one
sorry?
Of the places that I had a square root in the wrong place. The Bernardo's G coefficient. It's the square of the correlation of the test-retest values. Just make sure that's coded in correctly because that's one
okay.
thing that at one point... I had incorrectly. That's why I actually have one lot with a different one set of results for the different reliability coefficient because I actually coded it in wrong. It's now,
okay.
I think it's now coded incorrectly, but it'd be really good to have somebody check that.
Okay.
okay.
Yeah, we'll check it. And you know, maybe if there's small questions that come up, we can just send a couple emails around to
sure.
clarify it.
Oh yeah.
Now about the plots that weren't produced and your question about what was it playing around with the plots in R?
Oh yeah, the trellis. Plot.
Yeah, the trellis. Do you know exactly what you had in mind for that?
No, I just know that when you start, that you see, you didn't see, I'll try and send you the one with 12 tomorrow so you can see the problem.
Okay.
It puts them out with a lot of space in between. When you use trellis graphics, you don't get space in between. It lines them up,
okay.
and they do it with group to data. And when I've finished working on my other project, I'll probably know how to use them, but right now I don't. I just thought that we'd get, if we wanted to put 12 things on one page, if somebody could use trellis graphics to do it by kind of vectoring everything together and then making it group data, we'd get
plots. Well, but task can do it with, like, the par MFRO commands, right?
I'm sorry? Is it what?
Okay,
right.
R uses, like, that par MFRO and MFColumn commands?
No, that's what I use to get the 12 plots, but when you
oh.
do that, you get a lot of space between them.
Oh, I see. Okay.
There's also a way of splitting the screen, which my friend Connor uses, but I don't think that's much better. Trellis graphics are when, like, if you're doing HLMs, you use trellis graphics.
Okay.
If you want to send me the graph with the 12 plots on it, I'm willing to take a look at the Trellis package and see, you know, what we can actually get to
work. That would be excellent. I can maybe send you a... Oh, you're breaking up.
Yeah, everyone's breaking up a little bit.
You know, it's somebody trying to get in.
Okay, it's 6 o'clock. We probably have to go. We'll email each other.
Okay, great.
All right, thanks. All right.
So why don't Phil and I keep working on it, and then we can, once we have some more stuff done, we can touch base again.
Yes, sounds great.
Do you think that we ought to set up a timeline?
Do you want to set up a next meeting?
Well,
I'm fine.
Not the next meeting, but when stuff's going to be done. JSM is rapidly approaching.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice to kind of target early July to have everything done so we can add whatever changes we need later on, or I can just, you know, create the presentation that I need.
Yeah, we need enough runs done that you've got enough substance for a presentation, because then we can keep adding more stuff that will go in the paper between now and JSM. We just have to know that we've got the basics done.
Right.
I'm away from the 22nd of May. That's when I go to my conference. So if we're doing another call on the Thursday, it would need to be the 20th.
Of May.
I can't wait till the 20-somethings if we're doing it in about 4 weeks. What are we now, the 22nd? Oh, well, that's okay, because that would be the same place. Or if you want to do it a week earlier, that would also be fine, the 13th.
Well, I actually have a conference that I'm presenting something at the first couple days of June.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we should try and meet, like, May 20th?
Okay.
Does that work? Phil, I think we were on that day anyway.
Are we? Yeah, let's see, looking at my calendar... I have it in my phone.
Do you want to email?
No, we, ours is...
I had us listed at 2:30 p.m. my time on May 20th.
Okay, I just didn't put it in my phone. So 2:30 your time.
So
yeah.
11:30 your time.
May 20th is wide open then for me.
So then do we want to have this call a little bit later? Because, Phil, that was supposed to be the instructor characteristic stuff.
Right. Right.
Do you want to email? I'm worried somebody's trying to get in to use this phone.
Okay. Why don't we email them and find the time?
Wait.
Okay. That sounds good.
All right.
They really just have to wait because until we're done.
Well, but we were supposed to be 4 to 5.
Yeah, we're supposed to be through it on the hour, which was 6 o'clock my time. That's what we were booked for.
We were supposed to be done 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Why don't we do it on email? I think it's fine. There's only a few of us, so.
Okay.
Okay. That sounds good.
Take care. Talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Michelle?
Thank you. Please stand by.